He looked me in the eye and he said this to me. We were both raised in Christian homes, but we've decided, my wife and I have become more open-minded. We don't want to push our religious beliefs on our kids. That was his response to me when I had invited him to church. This happened earlier this summer. I've had that conversation probably at least a half dozen times over the past couple years, specifically people who had grown up in the church saying, well, you know, I just don't want to push my thinking onto my kids. You know, on the surface, it sounds so open-minded, it sounds so even-handed, so non-judgmental. And we do recognize that there is a problem with a comment like that, though, right? I suppose if you are telling your kids to brush their teeth before they go to bed, right, it would be okay to teach them about God, too. That's just a kind of a snarky comment off to the side. The problem with that, though, is that Christian moms and Christian dads are explicitly commanded to raise their children to honor, to love, and to worship the God of the Bible. Proverbs chapter 1 through 9 is the wise counsel of a parent, specifically King Solomon, to his son Rehoboam, that this is what wisdom looks like, and I want you to walk this way, not that way, and I want you to do this and not that. Rehoboam, we'll look at his life a little bit. Rehoboam contrasts the way of wisdom versus the way of folly, which is Rehoboam's way. And Solomon's words, as ancient as they are, have a lot of contemporary wisdom for us today. And so I want to preach a message to Christians. You may have kids, you may not have kids, you may be a grandparent, you may be a student, you may be a child in here this morning. Everyone, this message is for all of us. I want to preach a message titled, That Wisdom Teaches and Wisdom Listens. Wisdom teaches and wisdom listens. And there are four commands in this verses 8 through 19 of a wise Christian parent. And the very first command from a parent to his child is this: listen up. Listen up. Look at verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Forsake not your mother's teaching. They are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. Did you see who is to do the instructing or the teaching? It says, listen to your dad and listen to your mom. That both of them are to be the ones imparting godly wisdom. So Solomon has some presuppositions that are embedded in that text that we can't just kind of cruise over. What are the presuppositions, right? The presupposition is first of all this: that it should be one man and one woman for life. This is what godly wisdom looks like. And that both a husband and wife are worshiping the God of the Bible. This is, right, he's presupposing that there are some certain realities or some certain realities in a home. I'll address the aberrations here if you find yourself in a different situation in a moment. But the idea is this, is that mom and dad are to be teaching the scriptures, wisdom. I've often, in my context as a pastor, have heard, or whether it's been said explicitly or implied, many dads will think to themselves, well, you know, I provide for the homes and for the home in many ways. By the way, my wife has greater spiritual sensitivities than I do, which is often the case in many a home, and that's okay. But Dad, I want to say this to you. You are commanded by the Scriptures to be the spiritual leader in your home. That though your wife may have greater spiritual sensitivities now, it ought not be that way for the remainder of your life. That it is your responsibility to lead spiritually. Dad, I say this to you, that it's on Sundays, right? You get up early. You help get the kids ready. You make Sunday morning church a Saturday night decision. That's something to think about on Sunday mornings. And just a word to single parents for a moment, because I know as soon as I talk about some presuppositions, there may be in your heart kind of a, oh, I don't want that to be that way for you. For single parents, or for those of you who are married to spouses that have yet to trust Christ, I want to say this to you, that you can do it. You can do it. You can raise those kids or child to honor and love Christ. It won't be easy. But I do want you to remember this. Do you remember that there was actually a book written in the New Testament, a book written to a man who was raised by a believing mama and an unbelieving daddy? Yeah, Pastor Timothy. Pastor Timothy had a godly mom and a godly grandmother, but his father was unbelieving. So I say that to you to offer encouragement. Don't be discouraged in that. The child that listens, he says, if you listen, children, right? Or when the students, if you're in here, like it's like a graceful garland about your head, like an Olympian's award. That pendant is more like a diamond necklace. The reference to the neck is interesting, right? Because Solomon will say this later on in Proverbs, that a hardened neck is likened to a rebellious heart. But a child who receives instruction, according to here in Proverbs 1, is awarded that diamond pendant necklace for his or her neck. Parents, I want you, as you think about what does it mean to be a godly parent, that the very first lesson before they ever chew with their mouth open with food, that's not the most important thing. Or whether they hold the door open for their mom, that's not the most important thing. The very most important lesson that our children can learn first, and that is this, is to listen. To listen to our voice. To listen to the instruction. Right, and you know this, if you have young kids or if you've raised young kids, right, you understand that this is not a weekend. You can't like teach listening over the weekend, right? Okay, it's Friday night, 6 o'clock. By Sunday at noon, we're going to have this thing whipped. We're going to have this thing figured out. They're going to listen by the end of this weekend, right? It's almost like with each stage of parenting, when they're real little, it's like, okay, you knocked it out, like the 2 and 3, they get it, and then all of a sudden it's like, something happened in their brain when they turned 7 or 8, and then something else is going to, when they turn 12 or 13, something else happens in their brain, and, you know, then when they're 17 or 18, you're just like holding on for dear life, right? Right? Brothers and sisters, can I say this to you? The most important thing that we can train our children to do is the first is this, and that is to listen to our voice. So like when they're small, right, it's getting down on one knee and looking them in the eye and saying, now I want you to hear me. Repeat back to me. Maybe you don't get down on one knee when they're teenagers, but you still say, repeat back to me what I just said, right? Folks, one of the most important way to train our children first and foremost is that they understand when we speak to listen. I know at that point, right, there's a lot of mamas and daddies in here like, yeah, man, let's get them. Like, why aren't my kids in Sunday school right now? They ought to be hearing this. But do you know one way to train and to model this ourselves, parents, is that when our kids are speaking to us, that we're not, I don't have my phone on me right now, but that we're not doing this thing right here, right? Or, right, if you're married, right, that when your spouse is talking to you, and I'm guilty, right? But that I put my phone down, or I put my iPad down, or the screen down in front of me, something like that, right? Or that even in a worship service like this, our kids are very intuitive, right? They understand what listening is. And so if there is the expectation that they listen to our voice, then I think it's a fair expectation that we listen to their voice, that they're not a distraction, they're not an inconvenience, and that when we come to worship, that we're listening to God's voice. The very first command is to listen. Hear, my son, forsake not your mother's teaching. Here's the second command. It's this, stay away. This is what godly parents, this is how godly parents talk, right? Listen up, listen up. Second thing, stay away. Parents, if we are not proactive teachers, we will become crisis managers. And if we're not proactively teaching, we're going to end up becoming crisis managers. But that's not what parenting is, right? It's not always crisis managing, so long as we're proactively teaching. Look at verse 10 is where I see this. He says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. The word sinner there in verse 10, it's a rather mild word. Yeah, it actually means kind of the idea of missing the mark, exactly what we would think in Romans chapter 6. It's a mild word, but for a rather mild word of sinning, it actually, in verses 11 and 12 and throughout, it actually leads to some pretty serious actions, like plotting murder. That is, what Solomon is going after is this, is that sin begins with a seed. This is always an encouragement and a discouragement, but right? But there's the harvest is always greater than initially imagined. That can be a positive if we sow to righteousness, but if we sow to unrighteousness, the rule still applies. It's almost as if here in verses 10 through 12 specifically, that sin doesn't even need an incubation period. It's just kind of like, hey, come follow me. What are we going to do? We're going to kind of waylay someone on the way. An innocent person who's not anticipating or not expecting. And a wise parent looks out and says to his or her children, stay away from that, from them. Solomon is going to write to us in just a moment, and he's not into this for shock value. But he's attempting to show us the full-grown tree of temptation's seed. That is, sin's invitation leads to destruction. Look at verse 11. These are the type of people to stay away from. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them up alive. Like the grave, let us swallow them up alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. Wise parenting and wise children who are listening have the ability. Wisdom peers down the path and says no because of the destruction to self, the destruction to the family. That is, sin is a business that's open 24/7. But wise, God-fearing people are looking down where sin leads and says, I want nothing to do with that because of the destruction that can come to me personally or the destruction that will come to my family. That is the old adage that I heard growing up is so true of a passage like this, that sin will take you farther than you want to go, it will keep you longer than you want to stay, and it will cost you more than you want to pay. Brothers and sisters, we look at a passage like this that seems so, on first blush, almost egregious, like I can't believe this. Of course you would stay away from this. This isn't that far off from what we know in life. Just think about a couple of applications. Think about addiction to pornography and where it started to where it is today. If this is a normal church, then I'm speaking to people who are addicted, men and women. But what it started off with is not where it is today. Think about the individual who initially is flirtatious with a coworker. It's just a gentle touch of the hand initially. It extends into more like work text messaging. But then it grows into something a little bit more beyond that. How's your day? And then even further beyond that, where we're kind of divulging some of the struggles in our own life. Well, financial mismanagement, it starts off small in some areas and can end up into deceptiveness. unchecked anger? How many homes have been ruined and destroyed with unchecked anger or unchecked bitterness? You see, when these invitations come, come with us, let us lie in wait, let us ambush, let us swallow them alive, there are always two invitations in the world. There's the alluring voice of the evil one that says, all will be well, it's okay. Right? And much of our popular culture and social media is built on this allure. But like a mirage in a desert that promises water, this invitation, right, promises joy, but it evaporates just as quickly. But just as there's an invitation that says, come, there's another equally given invitation, and that is, there is the life-giving voice of the Spirit, at least in the book of the Revelation, right? Where the invitation is this, come. And the wise person has to have ears that listen and discern the voice that says, come and you'll be fulfilled, or come, follow me, pick up your cross and follow me. The invitation that God gives to people who are hungry for true wisdom says, my wisdom is eternal. My path, it is narrow, but it is full of joy. Proverbs, in this passage here, Proverbs is not pointing us to a kind of a make-believe world, right? But rather the realities of a cold, harsh, cruel world. That is, stay away from those who would entice us to follow a path of foolishness. Now, here's the third command given by wise, God-fearing parents. And it is just simply this, be patient. That is, reject the voices that you're about to hear, because these voices that are enticing this simple one to follow along, are the enticement isn't just the death of this innocent one, but it's that if this innocent one can die, then we will gain his wealth. Look at verse 13. Like, we're going to come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush, verse 13. Why? Here's why. Because we shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We will all have one purse. It seems as if the very specific temptation that is being given to the son, the simple one here, is this, is yes, the blood will be taken and the grave will swallow them up by our very own hands, but don't worry about that, because on the other side of that is a pot of gold. You will have enough to satisfy yourself. And so wise parents are counseling their children, right? Be patient. We put it this way. Don't pursue wealth through dishonest means. The temptation is to have financial security at someone else's expense, someone else's hard work. Or even more destructive, all right? I don't have to put in the effort to sweat, to save. I can have what I want when I want it. So godly wisdom says to our children, and right, what better wisdom could parents living in 2023 have to their children on the area of finances than be patient? Paul says it this way in 1 Timothy 6, right? Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Parents, teaching and training our children that wisdom values hard work, sweat. That is the wisdom of saving for rainy days, the wisdom of saving for needs, the value of delayed gratification, and the journey oftentimes to purchase. The journey to purchase something, actually, when you save, can be a sweet, sweet reward because of the labor to get there. Brothers and sisters, do you see this, right? Do you see this as biblical wisdom, right? This is not divorced from spiritual wisdom. Like, it's Christ alone for salvation, and now in this, we're going to teach our children to be patient, specifically when it comes to finances, right? Don't divorce those as if that's spiritual and this is physical or this is material. No, this is part of godly wisdom. Right? And this could be true of money. School for many of us, right? Some of you already started school, but for many starts tomorrow. This is true about grades in school. And to be patient. So the first one we would say is this, right? Listen up. Listen to my voice. There are certain people you must stay away from if you are going to be a wise, God-fearing child. Be patient. Don't allow that allure, that temptation to suck you in. To be willing to trade your integrity or your character in order to get ahead at someone else's expense. Don't do that. Here's the last command that he gives us. It's just simply this, be warned. Be warned. I want you to, let's read verses 15 through 19. He says this, "Now my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. In vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird," right? Because that is, a bird can see it and will stay away from it. But these men, they lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. That is, their lifestyle leads them to this direction. "Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors." And when we're talking about wise parenting, I stated it this way to be warned for this reason, because what is the problem with verses 15 through 19 when we're looking out in 2023? Right, we see people every day on the news who have cheated, who have scandalized, whether it's businesses or families or individuals for money, and it appears as if they got away scot-free. And Proverbs' warning to the simple is this: don't follow them, don't go down to them, that they are setting a trap for themselves. It's going to be the cost of their own blood, their own lives. "So are the ways then of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors." The warning is this, that while these cautions are not immediate, they are ultimate. That is, what we're attempting to teach our children to be, when we're being wise parents, is this, is that the cautions of the Bible are not always immediate, that the warnings of the Bible don't always happen immediately, but they will happen ultimately. The fruit of poor decisions are not immediate, but they are ultimate. Or we would say it this way, right? Delayed correction does not mean no correction. Now, we want to use a goofy illustration. For those of us who have a little bit of a lead foot, you know the expression? Like to go from point A to point B a little bit faster than everybody else, right? Delayed correction doesn't always mean no correction. Eventually, right, you will see those flashing lights behind you to be reminded. And oftentimes we wonder, right, this is part of godly wisdom. We wonder because the ungodly seem to prosper. And so what God is telling us here is that wise people say, even when the ramifications don't happen immediately, we're still going to operate and function with integrity and character before the Lord. Right? For 70 years, Noah builds this boat without a drop of rain, and he's preaching righteousness day after day after day, while people are ignoring God's warning of coming judgment. And during those 70 years, while Noah's building this impossible thing called a boat, what's a boat, they said? What they confused was this. They confused God's patience for either his ignorance or his acceptance. And what this proverb is attempting to teach us as we think about what it means to be wise parents, and that is this: do not confuse God's patience for his ignorance or even his acceptance. That eventually the time will come where we will be held responsible before the Lord. Some will look at this parable here in Proverbs chapter 1, verses 8 through 19, and say, you know, I've never been tempted to join a gang. To kill someone? To take his money? Come on. I mean, this is 2023. And we live in Cyprus. Right? So let me ask you a question or two. Have you ever given in to peer pressure to do something that you shouldn't? Maybe not to join a gang to kill someone? Understand that? Have you ever done something wrong in order to be accepted by the crowd? Have you ever, right? I mean, and think about it. Like, if we're well past high school, every one of us is guilty in some way, right? But look, let's be honest, not just high schoolers, it's adults too. Have you ever used people or manipulated them to get what you want? James warns us this way. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and you do not have, so you murder. You covet and you cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. And when it says that you desire and do not have, so you murder, we may not murder, like actually physically take people's life, but we murder in a very Cyprusian way. We will assassinate other people's character. We will whisper about other people in such a way. Why? Because we desire something, we don't have it, and so I will murder. This happens in homes. You don't give me the respect I want, I will withdraw from you relationally. You don't give me the respect I want, I will withdraw, I will pull my communication from you. This isn't that far off from where we live. And so according to Proverbs 1 then, our greatest problems are not even the people outside of us, but the sin that lies within us. Indwelling sin has always been our greatest problem, right? And this is why we need a rescuer, right? So, Pastor Joel, you've titled this Proverbs Encountering Jesus. How does a passage like this point us to Jesus? How does it point us to Christ? Brothers and sisters, does this parable not mirror our Lord? Think about this. Judas is enticed to join a crew, if you will, of dishonest, greedy men who in turn set a trap for an innocent man. Why does Judas do so? For silver? And it appears, right, Jesus is then executed amongst the thieves, and it appears, right, that this proverb isn't true because they laid a trap, and yet their own blood, that is the Roman soldiers and the high priests, their own blood was not shed, Judas's blood was not shed, an ambush was set up, and yet their lives were not taken. It was Jesus' life that was taken, right? So it appears that a proverb like this isn't even true. The innocent man dies, the innocent man dies the death that thieves deserve to die, and the guilty man walks away with the money. Right? But Sunday morning, what happens? Judas is dead, and Jesus is alive. And so Jesus is God's good news for selfish, greedy, murderous people like you and like me. Demonstrating to us this, that Jesus rescues his own from our own foolish path. It's not just that we ourselves need to warn our children, but it's that we ourselves need to see that we need rescued from this type of path ourselves. Not only did Jesus take our punishment, but he gives us his spirit to hear the call of wisdom, to walk in the way of wisdom. He gives us the strength to avoid, can I put it this way? He gives us the strength to avoid easy money. He grants us the peace to be content with less than our neighbor. He grants us the ability to use our minds and our money to help others instead of to harm others. And he gives to us a new community that beckons us, that calls us to come, a church, a community then that does not entice us to sin. And now what we do is this, we conspire on how to outdo one another in showing honor and love and good deeds. Yes, this points us to Christ who is the true wisdom. And so we're not just seeking to control behaviors of our children, that we ourselves see that we need the gospel in this passage for us. And sometimes God shows us his wisdom by overcoming the wisdom of the world and doing so in 3 days, right? And a resurrection happens. But more often than not, what happens? God's wisdom demonstrates itself over a lifetime. And in some cases, not until eternity. I want to apply this passage then. I've talked a lot about parents, and I'm going to talk to parents here in a moment. I want to apply this passage 4 ways. First of all, you may be thinking to yourself, you know, my kids are gone. I don't have to worry about things ever being broken again in my house. No more fingerprints. My grandkids live across the country. I want to speak to you who are of the grandparenting age or stage. We at Grace Life need your wisdom, your voice, and your presence. We need you. There are parents and families in this room that need a grandmother-like figure who will pray them through hell's temptation and back. There are single parents in this room who need prayer warriors on their side. Who know beyond a shadow of a doubt that whether it's a test that happens on Thursday or whether it's the first prom at 16 or whatever age it is, right? Whatever it is, that those people at that church, they've got my son's back. They've got my daughter's back. That is, this passage isn't just for a specific stage of life. This passage is for a church that cares and prays for one another in this way. I want to plead with adults on the verge of making a disastrous choice or decision. That though you may not go out and kill someone, I'm telling you right now that that thought process that you have in your mind will absolutely destroy your family. That the foolish path is wise. And if you're looking for an echo chamber, right, Instagram and TikTok, it'll have it all. Affirming and reaffirming the decisions that you're already thinking about. But the way of wisdom is narrow, but it leads to life. And I want to implore our parents to teach their children in the pattern of parenting in Proverbs 1. Listen up. Stay away. Be patient. Be warned. Parents, I want to admonish and I want to encourage on both sides. Apparently, you can be a wise father like Solomon and still make really dumb choices, right? We're going to learn all about that when we talk about the strange woman in Proverbs 5, 6, and 7. But the dude has got like hundreds of wives and 1,000+ concubines at any moment of notice. You can be a wise father, but apparently you can make really stupid choices. You can give wise counsel and not follow it yourself. I want to then encourage, that's my admonishment, I want to encourage the discouraged parents. You're seeking to be wise. And that though you provide wise counsel, you have a child like Rehoboam who rejects wisdom. And it really is the heaviness of your heart. I want you to remember this, that God had a child once, Israel. Israel over and over in the Old Testament is known as God's child. And even God the Father had and has rebellious children. That is, I want to encourage you this way. parents, like God the Father, do not give up on them. And finally, I know we don't have a lot in here. I want to urge our students to listen to your parents' wisdom. Instagram, TikTok, Netflix, they're all entertaining. But woe to the one who allows those to shape your life and soul. You may gain the world, but you will lose your soul. That is, if Moses can consider the reproaches of Christ greater than the greater value than the riches of Egypt, in Christ, you can accept the reproaches of Christ greater than the riches of this world. If Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego can identify with the wisdom of pleasing God and not bowing the knee, in Christ, so can you. Parents, do not abdicate your responsibility. Because why? True wisdom teaches, and true wisdom listens. Not just for our kids, but for us as well. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the simplicity and clarity of your word.